The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, right now, on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle, live in studio, waiting to take your calls on your health. Anything you'd like to talk about, you know, how to fix you, except, you know, you haven't figured it out yet? Well, 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. Give us a call. I'd love to talk to you. We have a very interesting program today, but first of all, I'd like to wish all of us, including myself, happy Father's Day. You guys, you know, just remember, if it wasn't for your significant others and wives, you would not be a father. So don't take it too far. Just celebrate your day, relax a little bit. Somebody says happy Father's Day, you say thank you very much, and then go out golfing, tennis, hiking, play with the kids, you know, that kind of stuff. Now I'm going to be in trouble when I get home. Okay, so having said that, let's get to the program. We've got a program today that is important, and it's important because it delves into the area of why pain doesn't go away. Chronic pain patterns, things that just progressively get worse. We can't figure out what it is. We spend thousands upon thousands of dollars trying to figure out the why behind it. And sometimes the why is right there in front of us, and what we're talking about is this big wrapper, this plastic wrap that surrounds the body. It's called fascia, and fascia wraps everything from muscles to bones to ligaments to tendons to organ systems, so forth and so on. And unfortunately, it can get ourselves in trouble to the point where pain and inflammation starts ramping up. And we're going to talk about that with somebody that you all know and all know very well, the greatest professor that I know, Dr. Harold Browning.
Hi, Tom. Great introduction, as always.
Well, you know, I'm always impressed because I have yet, in all the years that we've known each other, and it's been a long time now, stopped learning from you. You have an intuitiveness, an insight, a capacity when it comes to this type of work that very few people have. And, you know, that's why it's exciting to talk to you about, you know, myofascial patterns. You know, let's start with something very simple. And, you know, this is something that we're saying that causes pain that doesn't go away, that doesn't let go, that no matter how you treat it. But in fact, what is the myofascial platform that causes this pain to come about?
Well, the fascial network, as we refer to it, is this giant web of connective tissue that dives all the way deep into our organs. It wraps our muscles, our bones, our ligaments, our tendons. So it's all encompassing. And as such, it has a huge impact on the way we move because it helps us transfer energy from one part of the body to the other. And it has a lot to do with slow progressive changes that we often see with aging. So as we age, and let's say we don't age appropriately, we see certain things change, range of motion probably being the biggest one. And really what it comes down to is this fascia, this wrapping slowly shortens because of lack of mobility, maybe what we do for a living, trauma, so on and so forth. But because it involves and touches so many different aspects of our anatomy and our physiology, it can be an underlying cause of problems, and we don't ever think about it as being the root cause when maybe in many cases we probably should.
So, Doc, you know, we have this wrapper that everything is interconnected within the system, and you and I know the term myofascial planes, you know, that they go from one area to the other to the other. But, you know, this pain pattern, what's the underlying triggers? What are the things that can cause it to suddenly show up and be so resilient and resistant that it doesn't want to let go?
Well, when you look close at the fascia itself, a couple of things that are important to know, that it has a certain degree of viscosity, Okay, so it has to have hydration in order for it to do what it needs to do, and it has to have a certain degree of mobility. So when we start to either lose that viscosity or mobility, then we are going to impair the way the body naturally wants to move. The end product is the joints that the fascia crosses over will often be impacted in a negative way. So that can lead to arthritis for unknown reasons, or that could lead to disc degeneration in the low back and a sciatica pattern, or a headache or a migraine situation that pops up that just becomes more and more prevalent. So you have to look at the underlying physiology of it and kind of help to explain to yourself, okay, what is happening as time goes by, and why is this getting progressively worse?
So we're talking about injuries or strain patterns that can, you know, that start very small, that can lead into big things. How about nutritionally? Are there any things that, you know, something happens that should reset itself, but it shows up in spite of it?
Absolutely. So, I mean, like I touched on a second ago, if we're not staying hydrated, then the connective tissue is the first tissue that's gonna show it. And if the viscosity of that fascia becomes poor, then it's gonna literally stick together. It's like having honey on two pieces of bread. It's hard to slide those two pieces of bread across each other. So if we're dehydrated, we're gonna have that problem. If we're chronically inflamed, meaning that our diet is very poor, we're not doing the things that we need to do to oxygenate the tissue, then we become more acidic and more inflamed. That's going to cause that tissue to break down. And because it's highly vested with nerves, almost always there's going to be a pain component.
There's that old acidity-inflammation connection again. It seems to be across the board with all kinds of things.
Absolutely.
My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, your host, your presenter this coming Wednesday evening at the Rizal Center for Healing in Fairfax. He's going to be talking about myofascial pain, chronic pain, stuff that doesn't go away. No matter what you've done, it's still there. Well, this is an opportunity to really get a good look at this stuff and see what you can do to fix it and make it different than what it is, maybe for the first time ever. Give us a call here at 888-630-9625. But more importantly, register for the class this Wednesday evening by simply going to rozellecare.com and go down, scroll down, it says register now, click the button. It's Wednesday, June the 19th, 7 p.m. at the Rozell Center for Healing. Or simply you can call 703-698-7117 and register that way as well. I'm going to get into this subject a little deeper. And you know, Doc, when we talk about myofascial pain, there's a lot of things that come up, and people start talking about myofasciitis or myofascial pain syndrome or fibromyalgia. Are there differences, or is it basically the same bundle of stuff?
I think there's subtleties of difference, but in the end, it's all basically tied together. And I think it's important to understand that because the fascia is so global, that where the pain is usually isn't where the problem is. And that's what we need to kind of take a step back and look closer at, because for most folks that have chronic unresolved, or I should say undiagnosed pain, there's probably something generating it that's distal to where the pain is coming from. So that's where the fascia comes in. That's where looking at movement patterns comes in, because the way a person moves basically is a historic representation of how well their fascia is doing at that time.
Okay, let's talk about it, because most people and most docs never look at gait and patterns. You know, we watch people walk. I see you every day of the week. You know, you open the door, patients going up and down the hallway, and you're watching them move and how their mechanics are working. So simply, you know, what would suggest that as you're watching somebody move, and a patient could identify this in themselves or in someone, you know, that they live with or they're associated with, what indicators, what would you look for when, and you say, you know, that's a fascial pattern? Or is it not that simple?
No, I think it could certainly be that simple. So from a static standpoint, if we're just looking at a person standing there in their posture, that's a good place to start. That's going to tell us, do they have balance side to side? Is one shoulder higher on one side than the other? Is there a subtle rotation of the pelvis on one side? Is a hip turned in or a hip turned out? I mean, that's a good starting point. That gives you an idea of how the person is trying to establish their upright posture against gravity. And when they don't do a good job, then you see these distortions. You take it a step further and you do it in an active phase and you watch their gait. Well, their gait might not be uniform from one side to the other. One arm might swing much more briskly than the other side. One foot arch might collapse more than the other. And then you can go into all the small nuances. But that's, again, that's just giving us a little window into what the fascia is either allowing us to do or probably not allowing us to do. So it becomes a cornerstone as far as diagnosis. We've got to look at the way the person stands, their form, their function. If not, then we're going to probably miss the underlying problem.
You know, here's one of those things that truly that the knee bone's connected to the hip bone, connected to the, you know, the rest of the body. And in myofascial pain networks, you can have a joint space, you can have other parts of the body that are not functioning properly that are triggering a myofascial irritation further up. Here's one that I see on a regular basis, and I'll have you explain it, is somebody that has a dropped arch in their foot ends up with either palpatory pain in the neck or in the shoulder, particularly in the insertion of the pectoral muscles. You fix the arch, and that deep pain goes away. How do you distinguish those? And is that true, by the way?
No, it very often is true. So getting back to the scenario, when the arch drops on one side, then the lower part of the leg, the tibia, will start to internally rotate. And as that internally rotates, it functionally makes that leg a little bit shorter. So as that leg becomes shorter, the pelvis will drop on that side. And as the pelvis drops, because the body wants to stay upright versus gravity, and we always want to maintain our eyes on the horizon, then we're going to have to tilt away from that dropping hip to keep ourselves upright. Well, if you kind of look at that pattern, then you'll see that the neck musculature and the traps start to develop excessive tension. So all of a sudden that dropped arch now is giving us that chronic unresolved neck problem. Feels better when we massage it. If I stretch it, I do better for a day, but it keeps on coming back. So the underlying issue might be way away from it.
So you got to find that underlying stanchion that's causing all of this before it actually will respond to any type of treatment.
Absolutely. So it's really the epitome of sometimes looking outside the box. And I think this especially holds true with people who have chronic issues and they've seen multiple doctors, practitioners, what have you, orthopedics, you know, different therapists, and it still hasn't been resolved. You can be sure that the problem is somewhere distal to where their complaint actually is.
You know, there's a pattern that we see on a regular basis, and it's opposite joint spaces causing problems. And you get in and you rub a tendon insertion out and it's sore. You can hardly touch it. But often you have to treat the opposite gait joint, meaning right shoulder, left hip, right knee, you know, so forth, the elbow. Is this also part of the pattern? Is this a myofascial situation, or is this something different?
Well, it certainly could be a myofascial situation. It certainly could be a joint dysfunction too. I can't, you know, forget about the joint being part of the whole picture here. So when we have restriction in a joint, by default, the fascia and the musculature that crosses it is typically going to shorten because we're not going to move that joint through a wide range of motion. And that's the important picture here. When we have good mobility of our joints, we typically have healthy fascia. It's when those joints become restricted and a range of motion changes, then we see slow progressive shortening of the fascia, which compounds the joint issue, which now accelerates the degeneration, and certainly the pain issue can permeate that as well.
So we're talking about something that can cause degenerative changes and true impairment and dysfunction and disability. This is an incredibly interesting subject. We'll get far more in depth as we go through the program today. My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor, your presenter, your host at the Results Center for Healing in Fairfax this coming Wednesday evening, the 17th, 7 p.m. Weather's beautiful. Show up. Love to have you as our guest. 888-630-9625 is how you find us here. We're coming up to a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rizal Live. We are in studio on Father's Day, and we wish all of you a happy Father's Day. Hopefully you're having a great day and enjoying it. Just remember, guys, you're only a father because somebody's acknowledging you, so be nice to them, too. My guest in studio, your host, your presenter this Wednesday evening at the Results Center for Healing in Fairfax, 7 p.m., Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor. It's the 19th of the month already. We're almost halfway through the year, and by the way, first day of summer is coming up this week, too. So hopefully the weather continues to be moderate and nice, and we'll enjoy it. But nevertheless, Wednesday evening, show up, and we'll help you with a very significant problem. It's called myofascial pain. It's pain that just does not go away. Before we get into that a little bit more in depth, and I want to talk about sympathetic reactions, your fight-flight mechanisms, and how they are involved in trigger point patterns and so forth, I want to go to the phones. We have some people waiting. Matt, thank you for calling. How can I help you?
Hi, Dr. Rozelle. Unfortunately, a month ago, I suffered a pretty severe fall and two fractured thoracic vertebrae, T11, T12, I believe. I'm scheduled to see an orthopedic doctor in about 2 weeks, couldn't get in any earlier. From what I've read about this, it takes a minimum of 90 days for any kind of natural healing to take place. My primary care physician said that a kyphoplasty procedure where cement is injection is probably what the orthopedic doctor would recommend. If I came into Dr. Rozelle's office, what kind of modalities?
Well, let me ask you a couple quick questions, Matt. And, you know, before we can even distinguish whether it's something that can be treated. How old are you first?
I'm in my late 50s.
Okay.
59.
And you broke the bodies of the vertebrae? Or did you break any other piece of the vertebrae? Sounds like if they're recommending vertebroplasty, it's probably the body of the vertebrae itself, the big portion?
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay. If that's the case, and it depends on how bad the fracture is going to collapse. The longer you wait without doing anything, the greater the chance of that vertebrae continuing to collapse if there's any kind of loss of substance or mass within the vertebrae. You need to get into a brace that keeps you erect. And
yes, I have a brace. They discharged me to a rehab hospital. It was like a mini boot camp.
Okay, so the only thing...
I've been wearing a brace since the fall, yes.
Okay, good. So the only thing that I can tell you that is possible with this type of thing is treating pain patterns and any kind of the myofascial involvement and increasing circulation to heal, increasing the mineralization of the area so you have the natural substances. But again, it would be fully dependent on the... how much damage has actually been done to the vertebrae. Dr. Browning, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it really does depend on the extent of the compression fracture. The couple things that I would want to know as well is what's your bone density like? You're still a pretty young guy. Was the fall pretty extensive fall, or what happened there?
Well, the curious thing about it, this is the 4 weeks preceding, I was in physical therapy. I've had back problems for 5 years, and I went to PT 5 years ago. It worked. So I went into my primary care in the beginning of April, so I need to go back in. I'm suffering. And I was 4 weeks into it, making progress when I fell. It was not at the PT place. It was in a parking lot. And interestingly, all of the core muscle groups that I had been toning and exercising were completely traumatized from the fall. Nothing else.
Well, the interesting thing, the interesting thing with that, Matt, is that the nerves that come from that portion of your low back affect a lot of the muscles around your abdominal corp, including the iliopsoas muscle and, you know, some of the rotators of that area. So they can lose their memory pretty quickly. They can turn off.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I'd add to that, you know, inherently when we get compression fractures from a fall, there's usually some underlying mechanisms that brought us to that scenario. Before you fell, did you have an excessive curve in the middle or upper part of your back?
Formally diagnosed, but as I said, I've had back issues for 5 years, so it wouldn't surprise me if something like that existed.
Yeah, so a lot of folks have an excessive curve called a kyphosis, which just puts more load on the vertebrae. So what we typically see, especially in older folks, is as their bone density gets less as they age, they'll just have spontaneous compression fractures because of that postural distortion. So that's kind of a one strike against us, and then all it takes is a fall, which maybe not doesn't even seem significant, but it's enough to collapse
the
vertebrae.
Yeah, Matt, here's what I would suggest you do. make an appointment for consultation with Dr. Browning. He's really on point with this. Bring your x-rays. That will tell us the story with a brief examination of whether we can help you. Based on the examination consultation, if we can help you, we'll tell you we can and we'll be able to produce the results. If we can't, we'll tell you that as well, and we'll tell you what we would do in that particular situation. So give us a call. Join us this Wednesday night if you'd like to. We're coming up to the halfway point of the program. We have to take a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Dr. Tom Rozell Live continues now on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozell here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozell Live. We are in studio. Happy Father's Day, everybody. 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. Very interesting topic we're going through today. It's called myofascial pain syndrome, chronic pain, pain that doesn't go away, pain that just continues to bite you and, you know, you don't know what to do with it. You've tried everything. You've done everything, and it just sits there and gets worse and continues to develop. Well, we have an answer for you. And who other than to give you the best answer than the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning. He'll be your host, your presenter this Wednesday evening, the 19th, at the Rozell Center for Healing in Fairfax. You can register for that class by going to rozellcare.com, scroll down, hit register here, and make it happen, or simply call the office at 703-698-7117. Dr. Browning, we have a couple more calls, and we will get to you, so don't leave us. But I want to begin to get into we'll call it the reactive pattern, the sympathetic presentations of what can take place in myofascial reactors. I mean, that can cover everything. We're sliding into trigger point responses and so forth. What does that mean? I mean, we're muddying the water. We're really confusing things.
Well, a component of pain is upregulation or mobilization of what we call the sympathetic nervous system. That's our fight or flight response. And that makes sense because if we step on attack, we want to be able to pull our foot away quickly. We want our heart rate to accelerate and our breathing to accelerate so we can move away and get out of the situation. But when that sympathetic nervous system becomes unhinged, meaning that it doesn't appropriately go back to rest, there's a balance between parasympathetic, that's the rest and digest, and the sympathetic, the fight or flight. When we become more sympathetic dominant, we now know that this propagates our pain syndromes. It makes it worse. And because the fascia, like we talked about before, is intricately tied in with our organ systems, that's going to cause even more issues. We forget about the diaphragm in the big picture. The diaphragm is our big muscle of respiration, and it is just completely bound with fascia, and it's also regulated by that sympathetic nervous system. So the wrench in the works often becomes poor breathing mechanics, and we don't take a deep breath, and now we don't exchange oxygen, and we go back to that acid-base balance. So the sympathetic nervous system and our visceral system are completely tied in with the fascial component. So we often see people with unresolved GERD or reflux, right? You see this all the time just as much as I do, that have a fascial problem. Their diaphragm is not stable, so then it causes them to reflux up or spit acid up.
So what I'm hearing you say, basically, is that this myofascial network has an involvement with every system, every organ, everything that makes us us. And if it's restricted or impaired or inhibited in some way, that we can cause impairment from impairment of function, if you will, of things like the lungs because of the diaphragmatic motion, like the heart because it's attached to that pattern as well. So we can see restriction in incapacity. Is that where we're headed?
That is exactly where we're heading. And we can extend that to the connections that the fascia has to the outer membrane of our brain called the dura mater. It connects with it physically in the upper cervical spine, so it'll pull on it. So for folks that have chronic tension type headaches, they probably have a fascial restriction somewhere outside of that locality of the headache that needs to be addressed. Pelvic problems, people with incontinence, you've got to remember that the pelvic floor is a confluence of muscles and fascia that supports or tense up. And when it drops, it's going to put pressure on the bladder. So all of a sudden we can look at some of these common things, the refluxes and the incontinences as we get older, and maybe say that this might have a little bit more to do with our structure than it does to do with our physiology.
I want to talk a little bit more about the triggering mechanisms on these things, because that's the piece people say, well, you know, how did this happen? Why did it happen to me? What's, you know, why do I suddenly have, you know, loss of bladder control? Why do I, you know, and some guys, you know, we today, every commercial out there is about, you know, ED. And here's the situation, and I'll throw this one in, you know, we can talk about it perhaps when we have time, is that so much of vascular erectile dysfunction, meaning the inability to get blood supply, is a result of restriction of tissue caused by, triggered by myofascial networks. Talking, you said a moment ago, the dropping of that perineal area, that lower portion of our pelvis, in our underside, if you will. 888-630-9625. We're going to get into this. This program is a lot of fun. We could actually talk about it for several hours. James, how can I help you, sir? Thank you for being patient.
Yes, I have double vision. I had it from a dental appointment where he was drilling for a long time. My head was in an awkward position. What can be done about that?
So this came about as a result of you being in a position in a dental chair. Then afterwards, you've noticed that the vision, and is it both eyes or is it just one? If you cover one eye, is the other one show double, or is it there all the time?
I think it's just one. It happened. And the next day, I had double vision. I didn't have it right away.
How long ago was that?
10 years.
Oh, okay. So we're talking about a chronic pattern. So the optic nuclei, the nerves that service the eyes, come from the back of the head, the lower portion of the head. And they do something interesting. The nerves that come out, there's two nerve roots from each side. One crosses over and centrally, the other one goes straight over. So if these nerves are being irritated, and this can be right in what we're talking about with the myofascial irritation to the muscles of the neck and of the head and the temporomandibular joint and so forth, causing tension enough that it's causing a aberration, if you will, in the signal that is controlling these muscles, and subsequently you're going to get a double vision type of pattern. Whether that's true for you or not, I don't know. An examination would show that, and there would be some trigger points that would show up in the side of the head, in the temporal area. There would be some at the base of the skull, and the vertebrae would not be aligned properly. So that can be part of the whole pattern here. If there's trauma, that's a different story, but you would see other disturbances. There's a great singer, you know, I love Italian music, but Andrea Bocelli, he ended up blind because of a soccer blow to the back of the head disturbing those ocular nuclei. But you can also have all kinds of vision focusing, even tunnel vision as a result of it. But in your case, you have a double vision pattern. So the trick would be to examine you to find out whether or not these muscles are in contraction that are causing a kind of a loop, if you will, recidivistic loop that's causing, you know, the impairment of those muscles that control the eyes. And if that's, you know, that's it, even at this stage, perhaps it might be able to be affected. Dr. Browning, you know, make sense to you?
Yeah, James, obviously you've talked to an ophthalmologist or anybody to rule out any significant causes of this, like to rule out a stroke or
yes,
that kind of thing. What was their take on this, on the cause?
They didn't give me a reason, just that happened.
When you look straight ahead, does one of your eyes deviate to the outside or the inside or up? In other words, if someone was going to look at you from straight on, do you have a lazy eye?
It looks a little up beyond the right eye.
Okay. Did they rule out that you might not have possibly torn the tendon for one of the little tiny muscles that control your eye? Did they look for that?
No, they didn't rule out that.
That's one place I would start. You see that I wouldn't say it's common, but it happens. Just like we have tendons that connect our muscles to our arm, we have muscles in our eye that have little tiny tendons, and those tendons can either be avulsed, means they could be torn, or they can slip out of their position, which doesn't allow the eye to focus straight ahead. So I would definitely look into that as well.
One of the things on examination that you look for with this type of thing is something called an ocular saccade, where the eyes would jump in one particular position over another. And there's several ways of provoking that, but that would give you another clue. But if you tie all those things in, then you can see whether or not it's a problem. And these things can obviously are chronic. You're having this problem now 10 years. So you know, an examination would begin to give very specific information. But James, if we can help you, that's the course that we would take. That's how we would follow through with it. And then if necessary, find a functional optometrist that would also help us rule in and rule out several things. But if it's a structural piece, if it's myofascial pattern, if it's irritation because of the TMJ, those things, even at this stage, might be able to be resolved and turned around. If we can help you, give us a call. 888-630-9625, talking about myofascial problems and their effect in the body, producing chronic pain, inflammation, irritation, degeneration, breakdown of joint spaces. Dr. Howland Browning, my guest, your host this Wednesday evening at the Result Center for Healing in Fairfax at 7 p.m. And it's the 19th already. That day will be almost summertime. Dr. Browning, let's talk a little bit more. We're just getting that sympathetic pattern. And let's talk about, you know, how it affects the heart and how it affects, you know, that breathing pattern. You know, so for some people say, oh, my God, you mean some of the things I'm dealing with may be nothing more than a myofascial problem.
Well, the way the sympathetic system feeds back into this whole thing is over time, as it's upregulated and it's more active, then we see our resting heart rate become higher. We become more of a shallow breather. We become hypertensive. Okay. And then because the sympathetic system basically pushes around the parasympathetic, we often see the changes in our ability to digest or get restorative sleep. So we get caught up into this spiral now where one side of the seesaw dominates the other side and at the end, it leads us down different pathways. So we start with a pain issue. Now we're getting treated for hypertension. Now our physiology of our blood sugar goes off. Now we're getting treated for diabetes. So they often are all tied together with these folks that have chronic pain.
So when you're dealing with that, if you can get the myofascial patterns to act normally and to release and reset their normal function action, these things go away?
They can definitely go away. Sure. But again, it's all about maintaining it. So as you well know, we have a tendency, to see our patients really buy into what we're telling them to do when they're in a lot of pain. And then as soon as that pain gets better, they start backing off the things that we told them to do, the exercise, the stretching, the eating well, to get the quality sleep. So then they look at us as their pain comes back as if we're doing something wrong on our end.
Yeah, lifestyle.
Right. So it's a matter of embracing changes. And I tell my patients, you know, if I'm going to give you an exercise, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to have to do this forever and ever and ever.
You know, I had the opportunity of meeting with somebody that you and I both know very well this weekend, Dr. David Lee from Boston and actually from Plymouth, Massachusetts area. And David is one of those guys that he has a reputation that if a patient does not do their homework, they don't do what he asks them to do on an ongoing basis, he won't treat them. And it's, you know, that's a little to the far end as far as I'm concerned, but the bottom line is that the message here is that we get ourselves in so much trouble simply because of neglect and unwillingness to shift and change. Pain is the greatest motivator. We have that pain pleasure syndrome, right? So when we're in pain, yeah, we'll do anything. But when we're out of pain, it's called then what? I'm out of pain. Okay, I'm good. But the bottom line is that you want to continue enhancing the capacity of your body physiologically. The sympathetic pattern is so important because you have patients that walk in with atrial fib. You have patients that walk in with, you know, shortness of breath, and the doctor diagnoses them as asthma because they start working out and they get their asthma gets better or worse because they can't expand the diaphragmatic area. So it shortens up and they can't get rid of the debris and the garbage within their lungs. All of these things point to a lot of conditions, but unfortunately we wait to the point where they're pathological, meaning that now there's tissue damage, but that doesn't mean that the underlying problem hasn't been looked at or treated or resolved because it was never approached properly, correct?
Yeah, that's without a doubt correct. You know, the end stage of a unresolved mechanical issue is usually some sort of deterioration in the tissue. So that could be arthritis in my knee. That could be a chronic tendonitis in my shoulder that, as time goes by, becomes what we call tendinosis, where the tendon is literally dying. It could be thickening of ligaments. So very often when we get MRIs of people who have low back issues, especially folks over the age of 50, we see that they'll have stenosis or narrowing of the canal where the nerve exits or where the spine goes through. Very often that's because these ligaments in our back thicken. So we have the same issue in other parts of the body. When we start to beat up those ligaments, they get bigger and bigger and thicker and thicker. Well, that's not ideal when we have sensitive tissues, you know, nerves and all of these other things right next to it. So these are all byproducts of just slow progressive change.
Can inappropriate stretching, can too vigorous stretching lead to these problems? You know, everybody says stretch, make sure you stretch.
So the dirty little truth is that when you stretch, you really don't lengthen the tissue unless you're holding the stretch for extremely long periods of time. And the research now is showing we're talking 10 minutes to hold a stretch. Now, I personally think stretching is very valuable because it's very soothing to the nervous system. So our muscles have resting tone according to what the nervous system wants to do. If the nervous system perceives we're healthy, we're going to have very nice, quiet, resting muscle tone. When we're in a chronic pain syndrome, or we have demands on our body that cause the nervous system to get more wound up, then the muscles get tighter. So stretching helps with that. It relaxes the nervous system.
And so much of what we do relative to our exercise is one-sided. So the opposite muscle, the opposite part of that joint, is now being restricted. And it's not because we haven't stretched. It's because we haven't balanced it. We're coming up to that part of the program where we have to take a little short break and pay attention to those who bring you Dr. Tom Rizzo live. We have a lot more. Don't go away.
105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rizzo live in studio on this Father's Day. Happy Father's Day, everybody. As you do every Sunday, right? 12 o'clock, high noon on the Eastern Seaboard. We bring you the best information possible. We give you the straight-up answers, things that you haven't heard anyplace else. This is your place. This is your opportunity to get health information that you can apply yourself, take the action steps you need to have, and most often come away smarter than most people, even a lot of physicians that are out there. That's why we do it, because we love you and we want to make sure that you get choices, you get opportunities, you're not just told what to do. You always find us here at 888-630-9625. My guest today, your host, your presenter this Wednesday evening, the 19th of June at the Rizzo Center for Healing, is Dr. Harlan Browning, and he's going to be talking about the subject we've been chatting about, myofascial pain, chronic pain, inflammatory reactions, impairments that take place. Tell you what, if you haven't heard this man speak, this is an opportunity for you to really hear from one of the best, one of the top teachers I know, a guy that can present information and make really difficult things sound very easy to understand and implement in your life. All you need to do is go to RozelleCare.com. That's RozelleCare, RozelleCare.com, or simply call 703-698-7117 and register so we can confirm your seat. These programs that we do, our in-house continuing education programs, are a gift to you. This way that we make sure that you get the information and you get it right. Dr. Browning, let's talk a little bit about what was going to happen this Wednesday evening.
Well, we're going to go over quite a bit of material. When I try to put together presentation, I try to hit on the topics that I think are probably the most important. And one of those is just an understanding of the way the body works. If we understand the connections that the body has, it makes sense why things go wrong. So we'll certainly touch base on those. We'll talk about some ways to improve mobility. The key to being healthy in many cases for a lot of folks is just getting them mobile, getting them up, getting them moving. So we'll talk about movement patterns and some of the things that I see that classically sabotage folks, things that have to do with their feet, things that have to do with their hip. These are all patterns that slowly change our movement and our postural patterns. And then we're going to talk about a lot of conservative type therapies that we can utilize, things that folks can do at home, things that we do in the office. And, you know, the end product is hopefully to inspire people to be more active. You know, if we stand up and we move, you'd be surprised how many problems just get better.
It's incredible. People don't walk. They sit. You know, today you don't have to get off the sofa. You can sit there all day long and flick through channels. You know, we don't have to get up to turn music on. We just say, Siri, turn on whatever. You know, we get in our car instead of looking for something farther away so we can stretch our legs. You know, we do as close as we possibly can get. It's not okay. And we continue to build problems, you know, over the years, and they become worse and they become restrictive and they become disabling. And that's the piece. Disability with many of these problems, and particularly when you go traditionally, you go to your good-meaning allopath, and he says, there's nothing wrong with you, you're just getting old. Well, there's a lot of old people that are out there dancing at age 90-something to 100. If you've seen anything on Facebook, you say, oh, my God, this is really possible. It's totally possible, providing that you don't ignore it. So if you want to hear how to fix it, you want to make sure that it's done properly, this is an opportunity. I got one other question. We only have a minute left. Diet. How big of a game changer is it with myofascial patterns?
It can be a huge game changer, especially for folks that are literally subclinically deficient in nutrients. There's just a lot of folks walking around that don't understand that what they put in their body has a huge impact on how healthy their connective tissue is. So I'm going to talk about some of my nutrients that I think are extremely important, the ones we've heard of, like chondroitin and glucosamine, and then we'll talk about other ones that typically we don't hear people reference, like manganese and biotin. But diet is an extremely important component, for sure.
You know, there's so many people in this latitude that are vitamin D deficient, and that deficiency can promote the things that we're talking about as well. So it's a juggernaut that you really need to understand, and this is an opportunity for you to really get a grip on it and to be able to apply principles that maybe you hadn't thought about, and some of them are really straight up, and you can make a huge difference in your life. This Wednesday evening, the 19th, at the Results Center for Healing in Fairfax. Make sure you're there. Coming up to that place, I have to say adieu. We'll see you next week. Just remember, I love you all.